Priority 1 message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
You are listening to the Trek Ranks Podcast, a member of the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network. This is episode 22, featuring the top 5 Discovery Season 1 moments. Welcome, Star Trek fans. I am Jim Morehouse, and I am the host of the Trek Ranks Podcast. And tonight, fresh off the Gormagander Grill, Trek Ranks is diving into a healthy serving of Star Trek Discovery, where we're going to break down our top 5 moments from Season 1. Such a great season. I cannot wait to spore jump into this thing. And with us tonight to go through it are a couple of Trek Ranks vets and, honestly, two of the most knowledgeable and dedicated Trekkies I know, without question. First up is Bill Mann of Trek Live, who's been on a couple of episodes of Trek Ranks before, including our 5-episode marathon for a newcomer and our top 5 gory moments, which both of those shows were awesome. So, Bill, welcome back, buddy.
Thrilled to be back and thrilled to be talking Discovery, which I unabashedly love. So when you asked me to come on for this particular topic, I was especially pumped.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I wanted to get some Discovery love on this episode because sometimes that's a little hard to find on Twitter with some of the belly aching we see out there. Okay, but enough of that, Morehouse. Stop worrying about that. All right, and also back for more Trek Ranks tonight is Mr. Alexander T. Perry, who's the author of many a great book review and Canon Connection article over on TrekCore.com, our favorite Star Trek resource on the web. Alex, are you ready to rank some Trek tonight?
Kapla, Jim. I am ready to conquer the Federation.
All right, so I wanted to see, are you working on anything right now for TrekCore?
By the time this drops, our last Canon Connections article will have gone up. It is the longest one I've done so far. And even though at times I've done 2 episodes at once, this 1 45-minute episode of Star Trek, the last episode of the season, had, I think, more Canon Connections in it than any previous episode. So it was very exciting.
Alex, will you hold my hand? Because that episode had a lot of Canon Connections, no doubt.
I will hold your hand, and I will lead you to the under-construction space dock in the orbit of Earth in the opening.
Oh, I love that. That was so cool. I spotted that right away. All right, and then for anyone who follows Bill on Twitter, he has meticulously, through the last couple of years, gone through a couple of Trek rewatches, and he categorizes, and he ranks, and he charts all of his rankings and gives out his season-by-season Trekkie Awards. It's awesome. Super great detail breakdown. Obviously something that we love here at Trek Ranks. So, Bill, I have to ask, when are you planning to go through Discovery and start to weed them into your awards and rankings?
Well, there's a very rough draft of Discovery rankings weaved into the 707 other episodes. That'll be coming soon when it's solid and I'm confident and that it's 100% right.
That's really all I wanted to hear, that it's in the works, because I figured it would be.
Oh, it's in the works.
Will we get any special previews tonight?
There will be at least one special preview because we have to pick our favorite episode. So that's going to factor in. Yep.
Okay. So let's start getting to that. Let's run through our Trek Ranks recalibration so we don't waste any time getting into tonight's awesome topic. So first up, as I think most regular listeners will know by now, general order number 1 here at the Trek Ranks Podcast is that we love Trek. And we love to rank Trek via some deep dive topics that really just get the conversation started. And as most of you know, literally my favorite thing to do is talk about Star Trek. So that's half the reason this podcast even exists. So hopefully when you listen to the show, you'll have some fun with it. Maybe think of a few episodes or ideas of things that you haven't thought about for a while in terms of Trek. And as our good friend, the Vulcan Master, likes to remind us each week, the main driver for all of our discussion here at the Trek Ranks Podcast is
infinite diversity.
In infinite combinations.
That's right, Vulcan Master. Our mantra here is no wrong answers. It's not about being right or definitive in any way. It's just about sharing the things that we love about Trek. So we love it all here, from TOS to TNG, straight through to Enterprise and the Kelvin timeline and Discovery, of course. Now, it's all fair game here on the Trek Ranks Podcast. All right, so before we jump into our level one diagnostic, let's quickly power up the Argus array so everyone knows exactly how they can hail us.
Hailing frequencies are open.
For Trek Ranks, as you might expect, you can check us out on the World Wide Web at trekranks.com and also at thetricordertransmissions.com. And if you'd like to leave us a message with your own picks, you can do that at 609-512-LLAP. That's 609-512-5527, and I will relay that number again at the end of the show. You can also find the Tricorder Transmissions on Facebook, and for those of you who've been enjoying all of the shows here on the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network, including Shore Leave and Disco Trek and Politrex and now Reading Trek, and there's a few more there I forgot. Oh, Trek Ranks, that's one of them. You can support the network by becoming a Patreon of our shows at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And of course, we always appreciate the support and all the great interaction that we get from our listeners. So, and in regards to that interaction, you can reach me on Twitter at TrekRanks and also at Enterprise Extra. So please reach out to me anytime there, as we just love to hear from you. And as you know by now, it makes the show a lot better when we're hearing from you. So to wrap it up, Alex and Bill, let's hear from you guys on how people can get a hold of you. Alex?
I'm on Twitter at Alexander T. Perry. I tweet almost exclusively about Star Trek. Recent highlights include a spirited discussion with Dr. Trek himself, Larry Nemechek, about visual continuity in Star Trek Discovery. So if you enjoy what you hear tonight, I would encourage you to seek it out and let me know what you think about whether Star Trek Discovery should look like it was made in the 1960s.
I wonder if that topic will come up tonight. And Bill, how can people get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter at TrekFan4387, and you can find me on Trek Live, which is a weekly live stream with my good buddy Dan, as we talk about all things Trek, all kinds of topics covering all the shows, all the movies. We talk about anything.
That's great.
And everything.
We're looking forward to getting Dan on the show, too. So that is going to happen. All right. I think we're ready to activate our level one diagnostic to get into today's show.
Diagnostic cycle will be complete in 20 seconds.
So this week's diagnostic cycle is actually pretty critical in terms of how we made our picks. So we're not just picking five random items that we want to highlight as our top five moments during the Discovery Season 1. And so instead of doing that, what we're going to do is we're going to categorize and kind of define each round a little bit to cover more ground, make sure we get it all in there. So here's how we're breaking down our top five Discovery Season 1 moments for this show. In round five, we're each going to pick our favorite production design element. So that can be anything like your favorite ship or a prop or a costume or the musical score or visual effects, whatever floats your boat in terms of a production design. In round four, we're going to choose our top performer or actor. So this topic is all about kind of the best performance on the screen, but also off the screen in terms of how your selection connected with Trek and the fans and promotion and just kind of immersed themselves into the Trek universe. Round three is the Dabo round. So it's a complete wild card. You can pick anything you want to hear. Round two is all about your favorite character. So you can pick that, you know, literally any way you want, but it's about whether it's your favorite narrative or maybe your most interesting character or someone you just want to see more of in season two, but get to highlight a character in round two. And round one is clear. That's the Trek Rank staple. What's your favorite episode of the season? Because that's what we do here at Trek Ranks. So after that, we'll do some secondary systems choices just to get a few more outlying picks. So Alex and Bill, that's a lot of detail, but I think you guys follow. All good to go?
Good to go.
Oh, yes.
All right. Let's jump into our prime directive.
I do not concur with your captain's decision.
She's following our prime directive.
Define prime directive.
All right, now that we have our breakdown on exactly how our picks are going to be targeted in this show, I'm wondering how you guys approach the topic. So, Alex, anything special on how you went around narrowing down your picks?
Man, this was really hard. I feel like this is five episodes in one. No, I kind of, the way I approached this was to think about things that maybe I thought would just be fun to talk about, and that maybe weren't kind of the first things that would come into people's minds. I kind of went with my gut on it too. Not too much going back and forth.
That makes sense. That's similar to me. So, Bill, how about you? How did you break it down?
My initial reaction was to come up with short lists and try to whittle down and get really analytical, like I tend to do about just about everything. But I ended up coming back to just reading the list of different topics that we're doing tonight and just kind of going with the first thing that popped into my head about each one. And they're not all like standard canned answers. There's some deeper cut stuff, I think, in here. But I kind of wanted to go with my gut on this.
Well, you know, Trek Ranks, we put up with deep cuts. We love deep cuts at Trek Ranks. That's what we're all about. All right, so my prime directive was pretty simple, I think, when it comes to most of these topics, and especially favorite episode and favorite character. And that's my normal driver for most of my picks at TrekRanks.com. And that's that if I could only watch one episode or watch one character for the rest of my life, which one would I pick? That's kind of how my mind works and how I usually end up narrowing things down. Of course, that doesn't quite work for production design elements. So, but for some of these categories – that's how I broke it down. All right. I think we are ready to activate the spore drive and jump into the order of things.
I am a Jem'Hadar. He is a Vorta. It is the order of things.
Red alert. Battle stations.
Wrong one. Hold on.
Black alert. Black alert.
Oh, yeah. We're starting the order of things with a black alert because we are jumping into some Star Trek Discovery conversation. So this is how we're going to break down our topics tonight. First, as we go through the picks, first, each of us will reveal our 5-word summary and a hashtag for our selections. After that, we'll reveal our selection for each of our topics, and then we'll each comment, you know, about what we think about each pick. And at the end, we'll ask for a few secondary system selections for the picks that just missed our lists. And if we end up having any duplicate picks at all, make sure to listen for this sound. Alex, let's start with you for round 5. We're doing our favorite production design elements. What do you got?
Okay, so my 5-word summary is insane hand-to-hand combat. And my hashtag is Michelle Yao is a badass. I wanted to highlight the hand-to-hand combat scenes in Star Trek Discovery. It's not the most cerebral of choices, and this is Star Trek. But one of the things that struck me rewatching this season recently was that, you know, it has a very TOS flair in that way. I mean, you know, TOS was at once a cerebral show, but it was also a show in which sometimes the only way to solve a problem was a knockdown, drag them out, hand-to-hand fight between normally Kirk and whoever. And I thought for Discovery, the combat scenes were just so well done. I mean, a couple of highlights, the Burnham-Cole fight in Into the Forest I Go, the Burnham-Connor fight in Despite Yourself, where they have that punch up in the turbo lift that in which Burnham has to kill Connor. My favorite, and I think the best way to describe this is the brawl between Burnham, Georgiou, Lorca, and Landry in what's passed as prologue, where it's so kinetic and frantic, but at the same time, you kind of have a really good sense of the story and how it plays out, the interactions between the characters, even during what is a pure action scene. I mean, one moment where Landry's about to get one up on Burnham and Lorca actually knocks her out because he doesn't want Burnham to get hurt. It's just like a quick, like half second cutaway shot, but it's so telling about the characters in just that one moment.
Oh man, fight choreography. That's such an inspired pick. I love it. And you make a great point. I hadn't really thought about the way it does connect to TOS in that way, because obviously there's a lot of fisticuffs in TOS, and this you would not see as much fisticuffs in any other iteration of a Trek series like TOS and Discovery. I love this pick. Bill, where are you at?
I totally echo all that. I also, when I was watching What's Past His Prologue for the first time, that fight scene did remind me of TOS. Just the sprawling, like, just balls to the wall, action, fist fight nature of it just brought me back to Arena and Space Seed and
yeah,
Bay of the Dove, just completely throwing everything to the wall and just going for it. And you don't get a lot of that, like you said, Jim, in the other shows. There's the occasional one. I know you're a huge fan of the fight scene in Conspiracy. I know that's like one of your favorites. There's things here and there, but it's not a lot. Like, it's like we get it in a way in Discovery that we kind of haven't since TOS. So I totally love the spec.
Yeah, I love that fight scene in Conspiracy where the doors go everywhere and the double.
Anyway. Especially in high definition when you can really tell it's the stunt double.
I just don't understand what Admiral was. Admiral Quinn, right?
Yeah.
So I don't understand what his plan was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like he just did a show and then it works. Right. I don't know. Anyway, okay, we're getting.
I will say one thing about Discovery, though. In season two, I would really like a flying wedge kick similar to Kirk against Khan in Space.
Khan, yes. I was about to say that the definitive all-time fight will always be Kirk versus Khan in engineering, but Discovery right there in terms of choreographed fights. I love this pick. All right, Bill, what's your round five pick for production design?
My five words and a hashtag is soundscape of Star Trek nostalgia, hashtag perfect callbacks, and it is the sound design. It's all kinds of stuff. It's the bridge background noise. It's the hailing frequency sound that you get every time in the show. It's the sound of the phasers and the photon torpedoes. Like, there's all this great iconography sound stuff happening in it that calls back to TOS, and there's some TNG era 24th century stuff. There's even a little hint of Enterprise here and there. Like, it's this hodgepodge of everything. And then on top of that, they have their own new kind of Discovery specific stuff, like the Black Alert that's often referenced in Trek Ranks these days, and the jump sound effects. Like, they have their own stuff too. It's not just calling back to existing stuff, but the first thing that came into my mind when I went to pick this was the scene in What's Past His Prologue when Burnham is trying to hail the Discovery, and she's just, you know, you get a couple of hits of that hailing frequency sound, and it's amazing how a simple sound effect makes me giddy and happy in all kinds of ways.
Yeah, that's a brilliant shout out. So smart to think of this one. Not one that popped into my head, but I remember from the very first couple episodes when all those sounds are just kind of inundating you and there's so much Star Trek in them. And some of it's like, I'm like, those are 20. That's Enterprise. That's a TNG sound. That's 21st. It was just overwhelming. And I love it from start to finish with the way they integrated sound into everything they did. How about you, Alex?
There are two moments in the Vulcan Hello when I knew that Star Trek was back. The first is when the Shenzhou comes through the clouds to that Alexander Courage famous music in Star Trek. And the second was after the opening credits when they push in through the view screen and Burnham's standing there. And as soon as they push through that view screen, you get this kind of wall of the beeps and boops and trills of sort of the Star Trek milieu. And that was really the second time where I was like, yes, Star Trek is back. It's on TV. It's such a recognizable soundscape. And it's so, as you say, it's so essential to the franchise, but you don't even realize it. And so, yeah, I know. I think this is a fabulous, fabulous pick.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I'm going to use it as a segue because some of the sound design is part of my number five pick for production design. So let me jump in there. It's my five words and a hashtag are mix of TOS and the cage, hashtag the perfect phaser. And of course, it's the Type 2 phaser from Discovery. And I'm actually holding one in my hands right now because I love this thing. And I got to say, this is probably my hardest choice to make of these five categories. I know I'll end up mentioning some other alternate production design favorites later in secondary systems, but for me, I could not overlook this phaser. It's just perfect. And the sound design, of course, is when you move that nozzle on the front end and it makes that really loud noise. And everyone's like bitching, that makes too much noise if you're trying to sneak up on somebody, but who cares? It sounds awesome. So I just love the first time I saw this thing was when they had a promo shot of Burnham and Georgiou on the transporter. And I remember I zoomed in on it because you could only see the bottom part of the cage style nozzle on the bottom. And then on the top, you could see the grids and the kind of the TOS style phaser sticking out of the holster. And I just was thinking, oh my God, I cannot wait to see this phaser because it looks like the perfect design to mesh between the cage and TOS. And of course it is. And it's got the type 1 phaser pop out things. It's just brilliant. I love the way they utilize it throughout the series. So, Bill, what's your take on the phaser?
I love the Discovery phaser. It's at home in TOS. It's at home in the cage era. It's a perfect amalgamation of all these different designs that we get over the years. And my jealousy knows no bounds that you're holding one as we're recording this. I want one bad.
Alex, how about you?
Say what you will about the visual design for Star Trek Discovery, and people have said a lot about it. I think one of the things that has united everybody, whether you are a fan of kind of the original design ethos for the original series or the more updated Discovery design, is how fantastic the phaser is. I mean, it really is that kind of perfect retro modern combination design. There are elements of not just the cage and the TOS phasers, but I think there's some of the assault phaser from Star Trek 5 and 6 in the grip. I think there's a little bit of the Search for Spock phaser in there as well. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, you could just as easily see Jeffrey Hunter holding that phaser in the cage as you can Sonequa Martin-Green holding it in Discovery. And I think, you know, it is the perfect visual representation for what they've been trying to do with this show.
Yeah, agreed. And Bill, when people say, oh my God, you got that phaser, I'm like, yeah, that's why I work. That's the only reason I work, is to buy that kind of phaser. All right. It's an awesome collector's piece for sure.
So cool.
Okay, let's move to round four. We're going to talk about our top performer or actor. And again, so by that we mean the consideration here is on both on and off the screen. So in terms of promotion for the show, fan interaction, just how they kind of immerse themselves into the Trek universe. So Alex, who's your top performer round four?
So my five-word summary is the back half of Kulmutz, and my hashtag is mycelial network. My pick for top performer is Anthony Rapp. And really, you know, when you first put this to me and said it's both on-screen and off-screen performance, I was really drawn to the off-screen part of it. I think Anthony Rapp's interaction with the fans has just been stellar. I mean, from the time he was hired and started his watch of the whole franchise, and tweeting about it and being very interactive with the fans and even getting involved in some of the Facebook groups, which, you know, can be some of the worst places to go for Star Trek Discovery. But he's there, he's engaged, he's even reading the novels and writing Goodreads reviews of the Star Trek novels. I mean, you know, there are diehard fans who have their own podcasts who aren't novel readers. And he is. And so I just think for that reason alone, in addition to his incredible performance on Star Trek Discovery, but for being interactive and being there for the fans, Anthony Rapp had to be my number one choice.
Yeah, I love that pick. My memory of him is always going to be that image of right when he got cast, when he tweeted a photo of himself with all those DVDs that he was going to watch and do his research that his friend had given him. And I remember thinking, his friend must just be going insane bonkers knowing that his buddy's going to be on Star Trek. So, Bill, what's your take on Rapp and his interaction with Trek?
Anthony Rapp deserves this citation just for being brave enough to wander into the cesspool that is Star Trek Discovery Facebook.
Yes.
Like, that alone is a brave, brave man. His performance is wonderful. Stamets is the man. I did not choose him. I'm glad you did, Alex. I'm glad he's getting his props on this episode. If I was just talking about the cast member who's interacted with the fans best, it's clearly Anthony Rapp. I went in a different direction, but I'm thrilled that you picked him.
That's awesome. Well, let's hear your pick because I can't wait to hear this. So round four, Bill's pick for top performer.
My five words in a hashtag is the most believable alien ever, hashtag Kelpian. And it is obviously Doug Jones. Doug Jones is incredible in Star Trek Discovery. He's very renowned for his performances in Guillermo del Toro's movies. He plays monsters and creatures that don't really say much. He's in The Shape of Water. He's fantastic in that. But in this, he gets to play like a fully formed character. But what he brings through the experience with Guillermo del Toro movies and having to play these creatures is this he brings this unique ability to truly be alien in a way that we haven't really seen in Trek before. His physicality, his body type, his posture, his the way he walks, his expressions, little tics and mannerisms are truly alien. Just watching him in scenes he's not really featured in, he's bringing it every moment. In episodes that he's not really featured in, he's got a scene with Michael Burnham or a scene with Lorca, and it's all there. He's not human. he just can't be. And I just love that. He also sells this arc that Saru goes on over the season really well. He's got one of the more distinctive, like clear. He's one of only a couple of characters that's in the pilot and makes it all the way to the end. And he's got a really distinct A to B arc, and he sells every minute of it. I think Doug Jones is amazing. He's also really cool in his convention appearances that he's had. You know, I remember him at Comic-Con and, you know, on things like After Trek, he's always presenting really well. And I think he's going to be a fan favorite for a long time.
Yeah. I love this pick. I love the way whenever you hear him talk about it, and this is true of a lot of the performers, but he's just so grateful and thankful about being part of the Star Trek universe. You can just really feel it when he talks about it. And his performance, I mean, up on his heels and the arm swinging back, and when he grabs his threat ganglia, the way the guy acts with his body is phenomenal. Alex, how about you with Doug Jones?
Doug Jones is fantastic. Those shoes look really uncomfortable, and I will defer any other comments on this matter potentially for a later pick.
Okay, I love that. So let's go to my round four pick for top performer. And I was a little surprised by myself on this one as I went through it. So five words in a hashtag, Lorca surprises on and off screen. Hashtag Twitter and Fuego, ! My top performer is Jason Isaacs as Gabriel Lorca. And this was my hardest choice to make. All right. I said that for the production design too. So I'm lying. No, I'm right. They're both hard. Anyway, when I went with Jason Isaacs, I feel it was because I just the way he embraced becoming a part of the Trek universe as an actor, it's not something I expected when he was first cast. I really thought he was kind of a red herring. I'm like, Jason Isaacs is going to be the captain in Star Trek? You know, he's a pretty well-known actor in terms of movies and TV and other franchises. And I really just thought he's only going to be in it for a few episodes and killed off, and that's going to be the Burnham track to the captaincy or something like that. You know, this is all, you know, a year ago kind of thing. So when I found out he's one of the main cast members in terms of like the opening credits, I was so surprised. Like, what is the plan for this guy? And obviously we get early wind of his Mira Lorca. So I think everyone was basically expecting that twist, but I still didn't change the way I appreciated the way it was executed and the way he acted it and the way it unfolded. But again, the main reason I picked him is the way he chewed his scenery off the screen in his role on Twitter. And the guy is just unstoppable in terms of his kind of social liberal minded tweets. And it's obviously something I'm on board with, but I liked also the way that he poked Trekkies, you know, who are losing their mind about Discovery. And he had one quote where he was like, I'm going to read the quote. "I don't mean to sound irreverent when I say I don't care about the diehard Trek fans. I only don't care about them in the sense that I know they're going to watch anyway. I look forward to having the fun of them being outraged so they can sit up all night and talk about it with each other." I love this quote so much because he's nuts.
And boy, did we do exactly what he said.
This quote is respectful. People can't see that. He's being respectful of the community and the environment and knows what it is. And people just read, "I don't care about diehard Trek fans." it's like, yeah, context matters, especially with Gabriel Lorca, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
So
you might almost say context is for Kenyans.
You might just say that. You might say that. So I just love the way he embraced it and chewed the scenery on Twitter with Trek fans. So, Alex, what do you think?
It's funny. I think he was my second choice. And as I was considering Anthony Rapp and Jason Isaacs, I decided they were kind of the opposite of each other.
They totally are. I'm glad you picked Anthony Rapp. I'm glad you picked Anthony Rapp because they're totally opposite. Sorry, I cut you off. What were you saying?
No. Because Jason's just like, I'm just going to say what I think. And he's not super interactive, right? He clearly reads everything. And he'll pick out things to comment on, and normally it's to make some sly comment about them. But there's very little back and forth with Jason Isaacs, but it's still extremely effective. And his performance as Lorca was fabulous. And having gone back since we knew that he was Mira Lorca and rewatched it all, he really brings a depth to the performance that you miss the first time because you're so confused by him. But once you have the context is for kings and you go back and rewatch it, it really is just a sublime and masterful performance.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right. He wasn't interactive, but he was immersive. I mean, he was commenting routinely on things that were happening. And I appreciated that. Bill, how about you with Jason Isaacs?
It's a great pick. They're all great picks. Anybody you could have picked from this cast would have been great. But Jason Isaacs' takedowns of various people over the course of the last year or so have been epic and unforgettable. So that alone warrants a citation for sure. But yeah, everything Alex said about his performance is 100% true. I did the same thing as you, Alex. I rewatched the entire season leading up to the finale over the course of that last weekend. And it's amazing how Jason Isaacs was amazing right from the beginning, but how much his performance is elevated by the context, by knowing where it's going. And when you go back and you look for all the hints and the subtlety and the little winks and nods he gives you all through the show.
The guy's a great actor.
Amazing. Yeah.
Oh, all right. So instead of the soup round, we're having the Dabo round, number three, our round three. Alex, what do you got?
Okay, so this continues the conversation we were just having. My five-word summary is, it wasn't like it was before. And the hashtag is, I can't leave Starfleet's most powerful weapon in the hands of a broken man. I actually wanted to pick a particular scene for this pick. And my pick is the scene from Lethe after Lorca and Cornwell have slept together. And she, like, finds some scars on his back and goes to touch him, and he whips out his phaser and it's set on kill and sticks it in her face. And they have this conversation afterwards that when you watch it the first time versus when you watch it the second time are two totally different scenes. The first time you watch it, you see it from Cornwell's perspective. That this is a man who clearly has a lot of demons associated with the destruction of his ship. He's carrying a phaser set on kill around with him. He's not the kind of traditional Starfleet captain. And you get very powerfully that broken man idea of him just having a lot of really dark stuff happening in his head and pain that he's dealing with. And that all comes out of the last episode, Choose Your Pain, where you discover that he destroyed his own ship and killed his crew so that they didn't end up getting captured by the Klingons. When you watch it the second time, knowing that he's from the Mirror Universe, the power dynamic totally flips and you see it from Lorca's perspective. And actually what's happening is really interesting, where she leads him down the path of saying that he needs help and he's a broken man, and he goes with it. And I think, you know, he and in the earlier scene before they sleep together, she tries to bring up like things that had happened in their past, and he very quickly moves off of the topic, not because he's uncomfortable talking about it, but because he doesn't remember it. That wasn't him who participated in those events. And so she basically lays it on the table and says, you're depressed. I think something's going on with you. And he goes, yeah, you're right. This is what's going on with me, because it's the only thing he can do, because it's not like he can say, oh, actually, I'm from an entirely different universe and we're evil over there. So it's just so great. And props to writers of that episode, Ted Sullivan and Joe Manosky, because it really is one of those scenes where you watch it one time and it means one thing. You watch it a second time and it means something completely different. And that is just so fantastic.
So well said. And there's so much of the series is obviously like that. Such a great pick to pick a moment like that. Bill, what's your take?
That I thought a lot of the same stuff when I was watching Lethe again, with the context of the whole series leading up to the finale. I couldn't have said it any better. The scene is a whole new scene, knowing what you know later. And it is, like you said, Jim, it's the whole show is kind of like that. I can't wait to hear people talk about the show on rewatch, knowing everything that they know, having seen it all, and looking for all the little clues and all the new wrinkles that kind of expose themselves with the knowledge that is going to come later on.
Yeah.
So that's just like one example of all these different moments. Context is for Kings is loaded with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. so much better with context.
I know you, Michael Burnham.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, exactly. There's so much stuff.
That's a great summary. You're going to hear a lot of people backtracking when they go back for a rewatch, because so much of the criticism is, I want to know everything. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make sense.
My criticism is, I don't know everything. When you're it's like, get the context. We keep saying that. Foreshadowing. And by the way, I love the end of that episode. It was one of my big moments when she gets kidnapped, obviously, or taken prisoner. And Saru goes, hey, we're going to go try and get a jailbreak here, right? And Lorca's like, no. Command says we shouldn't do that. Or it's just like, wait a second.
By the book, Commander.
Okay, Bill, what's your wild card double round pick?
So my five words and hashtag is sweeping theme and classic iconography, and my hashtag is I haven't skipped it yet, and I am talking about the main title sequence and the theme going along with it. Yeah, to be honest, I remember a YouTube video coming out maybe a week or two before the show premiered, and you heard Jeff Russo's main theme. And if I'm being honest, I liked it, but I didn't necessarily love it the first time I heard it, but it has grown on me unbelievably. It was seeing it in the context of the main title sequence as a whole, the first night was a big step forward. But I've watched a lot of Discovery over the past however many months, and I have yet to fast forward through, these main titles. It's like a cool throwback in some ways. It features the ship and all the classic iconography, like I said, the phaser, the communicator, the live long and prosper sign. Like, it's got all the classic Trek tropes in it, the ship flying around, but it's a version of the main titles that's in line with, you know, modern TV as well. It's long and extended. It's great. I love it. I love the theme, and an extension off of this would be Jeff Russo's score as a whole saying is spectacular, and I can't get enough of his work, and most specifically his theme.
Yeah, his work on the series is phenomenal. It's so good for television. I'll just say that in terms of those visuals on the way that they portray, you know, obviously have meaning for things that are happening in terms of the season.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned that Vulcan sign, but then it kind of disintegrates and blows up, which obviously happened in Lethe, which we were just talking about. And I love the ending with the two hands, the two mirror hand images kind of fading apart. There's just so much of it, dude.
Absolutely.
With Gormagander, everything. It's just phenomenal. Alex, what's your take?
It's fabulous. I love the James Bond aesthetic to it.
Yeah.
That kind of, you know, iconography for the series as a whole being played out. It's pretty different from the other main title sequences, but I like that. I mean, I didn't want to watch something where it was just a ship flying through space with pretty scenes behind it, because, you know, Voyager's the best that could be. Enterprise did, you know, the history of flight dynamic, and so taking it in a new and different direction, I think, was great. And the music itself is fabulous, and the music for the show as a whole is fabulous, and And I think when they announced Jeff Russo was going to be the composer, I was thrilled because his work on other shows like Legion and Fargo has just been fantastic. And so, you know, for doing that kind of serialized storytelling,
yes.
And having the themes kind of reinforce that serialized storytelling, he was the best choice to do that.
Yeah, I was just thinking, but I was a little bit the opposite of you. I loved the score when I first heard it. And when I saw the credits for the first time, I didn't dislike them, but I was like, oh, okay, those were okay. But then when you start realizing that they have a connection to what's coming in the episodes, I really like that. And I can't wait to see what season two is going to look like, because I'm assuming it will be all different. Okay, so my round three pick is 5 words and a hashtag. Bookend moments from start to finish, hashtag Burnham, Georgiou, Saru. And my pick is these bookend moments from the opening few episodes and then the finale of Discovery. And it's one of the things I really loved as this series was closing off with these, the way they did this smart kind of reflective parallel storytelling that was going on throughout the season in the writer's room. And a couple examples. First, I love the setup from Battle of the Binary Stars, where Georgiou and Burnham are fighting on the Klingon ship of the dead, and Burnham, she can't get Georgiou out alive. Georgiou dies right in front of her. And then at the end of what's past is prologue, the two are fighting side by side again, and this time Burnham is not leaving without Georgiou. And that moment when she grabs her, I'm just like, oh man, it's such a great parallel to the beginning of this series. And I love the way that it set up these awesome twists in the final couple episodes. I also love the difference between the setup of the first two episodes, which is the flip on basically Burnham saying, we can't do it the Starfleet way, and betrays her captain and her ship and basically says we have to punch the Klingons in the face first. And then at the end of the series, in the War Without, the War Within, that's completely flipped now. And you've got Starfleet and Sarek basically saying that the Federation way won't work, and we have to use Mira Georgiou, and Burnham's the one to be there to show them, you know, the way back. And I just love that moment. And there's so many others where you've got like Saru and Burnham's, their up and downs, always, you know, always super respectful in terms of their relationship. But I love this, the bookend for Saru basically saying at the front, we need to run away in the Vulcan hello. And then by the end, he's leading the charge in the captain's seat for Discovery in those final few episodes. So you got Vok and Ash with Laurel. The fact that they end up together for me was really big. I just love all these twists from the beginning, that they were there together in the beginning, they ended up together in the beginning, but with Vok as Ash. So that's my pick. I'm cramming a lot into one pick, but really it's the way the structure of these bookend moments from the beginning to the end played out throughout the series. Alex, what's your take on that?
This actually was my other thought for this category. It's a very similar thought, which is that this season tells a complete story. It's actually the closest we've come to seeing a Star Trek novel on television. The way that you begin these themes in episode one and they carry all the way through 15 episodes and they wrap up at the end. I mean, obviously we had the cliffhanger with the appearance of the Enterprise, but for the purposes of the story and the thrust of the season, it's really all kind of neatly tied up at the end. And I think that's fantastic. I mean, the way that you have those reflective themes throughout the season, that really kind of, you know, initially when I first watched, as we were getting to kind of episode 4, 5, and 6, you know, episodes 1 and 2, to my mind, were falling down the list in terms of how much I liked them because they seemed very disconnected from the rest of the season. Like it was a 2-hour pilot movie, and then the real show started in episode 3. But now you've seen the whole thing. Those two episodes could not be more important for the overarching story themes and for the plot of Discovery, that it only makes the premiere more powerful.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you're right about the conclusion of the whole series, of the whole first season, was very satisfying to me. And you got the fun of the little Enterprise cliffhanger at the end. Bill, what's your take on that pick?
Yeah, it's a great way to phrase it. It's you know, long playing the long game, long running character development, paying things off episodes down the line is kind of what sets Discovery apart from all the previous Trek we've ever had. You know, Deep Space Nine certainly was well ahead of its time with serialized storytelling and toyed with it in ways that shows in that era just didn't very often. But this is on a whole nother level with the way that it pays things off way down the road. And the way you said it, Alex, with it's kind of like a novel playing out in front of you on TV. It's very apt. It's exactly right. It's completely different. And it's what makes Discovery Discovery and not, you know, just a rehash of previous stuff.
Yeah,
that we've gotten in Trek.
And I'll add, you know, I mean, I love serialized storytelling. It's one of the things I was looking forward to most in Discovery's launch. But I feel like we got awesome standalone episodes, too. I mean, the first two episodes are an awesome two-parter. You've basically the next three episodes are with the tardigrade or a three-parter. You've got magic to make the sanest man go mad. Seavis, Packham, Parabellum, however you say it. Those are very, very standalone episodes. And then you get, you know, some fun moments in the Mirror Universe, which I guess was more of a four-parter. But I feel like we had a little bit of the best of both worlds, even though I think some people would love to see a few more standalone episodes. Okay.
That's probably the thing that surprised me the most about the show, if I could go on this real quick. I didn't expect to have as many little standalone elements that we got. Lethe is another one that kind of works really well as like a standalone episode.
Agreed.
And it's not something I expected to see. I thought it was going to be straight line, all serialized, which it is big picture, but we did get a lot of really cool standalone stuff as well. Episodes that have their own personality and their own traits to be definable in their own right.
Totally agree with that. All right, so let's move to round two, and that's going to be our favorite characters. So, Alex, who do you got for your favorite character?
I think for the purposes of this episode, this counts as our first duplicate. My five-word summary is, we are still Starfleet, and my hashtag is fire, and it's Saru. It's interesting. You know, when I started the season, it took me a while to connect with the Saru character, but once I figured out what the arc was, I was totally there for it. I mean, he doesn't have an arc that is super integral to the narrative, but it is a really great character arc throughout the season. You go from this character who in the pilot is snippy and clearly has a huge chip on his shoulder about the fact that he's not the first officer and who is not confident and very fearful and throughout the events of the season really comes into his own. And through, you know, the adversity that he faces becomes a pretty good commanding officer. I mean, by the time you get to what's past his prologue and they know that Lorca isn't who he claims to be, and Saru gives this great speech about how this ship isn't Lorca's anymore, and this is our maiden voyage as this team. I can't wait to see more of him. I would say one of the things, the final moments that I was a little disappointed by was the revelation that there's a new captain on the way, because I would love to see an alien captain, and maybe the new captain will be an alien, but I would love to see Saru do more in that commanding officer position. And I just think Doug Jones has done such a great job of taking the character from along the arc from where he was in the pilot to where he ended up in the finale.
And he ended up with a couple of great speeches in Trek history. I mean,
yes, absolutely.
That one in what's past his prologue is amazing. Bill, what's your take?
Yeah, I picked
Doug Jones. I think we know it because you picked Doug Jones.
He's Saru. The first thing that comes to mind with this particular discussion, you know, the stuff in What's Past His Prologue is obviously awesome. Seeing Saru in command, yelling fire, being confident in his command. Yeah, I think back to early on in the Vulcan Hello when Burnham wants to go out and see what this object is and Georgiou tells Saru, okay, you go with her. And she's like, no, I'd rather go myself. And Saru's like, yeah, no, I don't want to do that. I'm not going out there. And that starting point and where you get to with what's past his prologue and beyond when he's in command of the ship is kind of the story of his arc. He sells it. Doug Jones sells it. Saru is credible, I think, in his learning process, getting comfortable in his own skin and as a leader, as a commander. I love him. I think Saru is a classic character already. And it's not, and the other thing about him is that it's not a known species. It's somebody that we've never seen before. Kelpians are completely a new idea, a brand new concept. And it already feels developed and lived in and
true.
Established. Like, I know what a Kelpian is, and that's all in Saru and Doug Jones.
It's really an original concept for an alien. I love it. And he's got one of my favorite quotes of the season, which was when Burnham says, Captain Killy, and he says, oh, well, that's not very clever.
Yeah.
I love that one. All right, Bill, what's your number two round pick for favorite character?
Five words and a hashtag. The lead isn't the captain. Hashtag, no problem. It's Michael Burnham. It's got to be Michael Burnham.
Wow.
For me. Yeah. It's this whole idea of making the lead of the show and the eyes that we see the show through, not the captain, not somebody who has arrived and knows what they are and has seen and done all kinds of stuff. Somebody who gets knocked on their butt and has to redeem themselves and has to go on this redemptive journey is the key to what makes Discovery unique and different and gives it the ability to tell this long running story. I love everything about her arc. I know it's controversial, and a lot of people would say this is the key to them not liking Discovery, but I love that there's a relation to Spock and Sarek involved, and that it's incredible. Yeah. It's just enough of a little thread that connects to TOS. And I love the stuff that we learn about Sarek's relationship with Spock through Burnham, the decision that Sarek had to make, like all the stuff in Lethe is pitch perfect. It's exactly why to set the show at that time. I know a lot of people struggle with having new ideas thrown into things that they've known for 50 years, but I love it. I love getting new texture and new ideas. And I'm thinking about that relationship between Spock and Sarek that I've been thinking about since I was a kid in all new ways. And it's because they chose this Michael Burnham character to be the lead and connecting her to Sarek. Like I said, everything about her is successful to me. Seneca Martin Green is incredible. She does so much without saying a word in her performance, her looks, her expressions. She totally walks that line, Vulcan human. It's a whole new spin on that whole idea of a character trying to struggling with their humanity. They found a new way to tackle that and do something new with it. So yeah, Michael Burnham all the way from it.
Well said. And Alex, before we get your thoughts, I want to say something. All right. So my pick for favorite character, my five words and a hashtag, I'm as surprised as anyone. Hashtag Michael Burnham's arc is the heart of Discovery.
Yeah.
And it is Michael Burnham. And literally everything you just said, Bill, was in my talking points. I know it's fantastic. I love it. It's not necessarily the most popular thing to pick the star of the show, but I just couldn't deny it. She, from day one, she has been riveting for me. And right off the bat, you could just tell this is Sonequa Martin Green's show and it's Burnham's show. I love this character. I love everything you said about Vulcan and the connection with Sarek. And again, I was talking about the bookend arcs before. You have this bookend arc with Burnham and Sarek and their long distance Katra connection, and then him finally calling her daughter in the finale. I just, this whole Sarek Spock riff, the additional information we got there is amazing. And Martin Green has just owned this character and the difficult way to play a human fighting with the Vulcan sensibilities that she's been. I mean, just like you said, it's a different spin on something we've seen with this alien character, whether it's Spock or Data or Odo, whoever.
Seven.
It's just really, really brilliant the way they pulled this off to have a secondary character be the secondary ranked character be the lead. And I will never forget the moment at the end of Battle at the Binary Stars where you are going to jail for the rest of your life. I was like, what is this show about? I love it. So that's Jim and Bill's take. Alex, what's your take on Michael Burnham?
Fabulous pick. I'm so glad you guys both chose Michael Burnham because, as you say, I mean, she is the heart and soul of Star Trek Discovery and the anti-Spock in many ways, where you have that character raised in a Vulcan environment with a pull from humanity. You know, one character, Spock, decides to go in the Vulcan direction. The other character, Michael, decides to go in the human direction. But both of them, it's muddy for both of them, right? Where Burnham had originally wanted to go in the Vulcan direction, and I think Spock had more originally wanted to go in the human direction, and they kind of end up back at Loco Parentis, and everything it adds to the Sarek character, I think, is fabulous. The character itself of Sarek now has so much more depth associated with it than he did before, and there's so much more nuance and tragedy to the character and his relationship with Spock. But you know, this show is Michael Burnham's show, and Cynical Martin Green does an absolutely fabulous job at kind of conveying that she has that very strong Vulcan influence, but still being a human at the same time. And I think since in the earlier category we were talking about the actors, I think she would probably be one of my secondary systems for actors who have excelled off screen, not so much because of interaction with the fans, but because of everything that the rest of the cast have said about her.
I mean,
they have been extremely generous in their praise for her role as the leading lady of,
couldn't agree more,
of Star Trek Discovery. And I think that's really important because, you know, there have been Star Trek shows where the leading actor has had conflict and strife with the other members of the cast in more than one of the shows. And so to hear that, you know, she's integral to ensuring that their chemistry is really good is just, it's so wonderful to hear.
Yeah, agreed. I always think that I'm happiest watching this show when she's front and center. Just so impressed by everything she's done on and off the screen for Trek. All right, let's move to round one and our favorite episodes. See if we got any duplicates here. Alex, you are up. What's your favorite season one Discovery episode?
Okay, so my five-word summary is perfect character drama advances narrative, and my hashtag is plus Andorians. It is the wolf inside.
Yes.
Which hands down was my favorite episode of the season. It was the meatiest from a character development perspective. It had
plus Andorians
and Tellarite. It had the most advancement of the Tyler Voke storyline. That scene between Burnham and Voke in Burnham's quarters towards the end of the episode where he tries to kill her is one of the most powerful scenes in the whole season. Saru has that fabulous little speech at the end where he's talking about how they may be in an anarchic world, but they're still Starfleet and abide by Federation law. And that was a real kind of, you know, fist pump moment for the Star Trek ideals.
She should have let me die. With honor.
No. We are stranded in a cruel anarchic world, but we are still Starfleet. We still live and die by Federation law, no matter how heinous your crimes. And if she had, Burnham's mission aboard the Shenzhou would remain incomplete. The Terran Empire's classified data on the USS Defiant. Our key to finding a way home.
Lieutenant Ash Tyler, as acting captain of the USS Discovery, I hereby remand you to the brig to await tribunal.
And then the end of the episode where you have the reveal of Emperor Georgiou and kind of, and you finally get that, oh my goodness, this all ties together. It is all one cohesive whole. It was just such a great, great episode. And that is why it had to be my number one pick.
Yeah, not just the reveal of the Emperor, but the reveal with that bombardment of torpedoes on the planet. That was so great. Bill, what's your take on The Wolf Inside?
The Wolf Inside is my runner-up. It's my number two.
Me too.
It is, like you said, it's so meaty. There's so much there. Shahzad Latif's performance in particular in that episode is off the charts good. Heavily in the running for the Trekkie Award for the best series lead performance of season one. He is incredible in that episode. That scene with Tyler in Burnham's quarters on the Shenzhou is got to be in the running for one of the better scenes in the entire series so far. The tension, the character development, all coming together, major reveal, things paying off, all there. Seeing Andorians, I think the stuff on the planet, just the visuals on the planet, the cinematography, the way that it's sold as an alien planet is incredibly successful. From a production element side of things, it's an incredible hour of Star Trek.
That's awesome. It's my number two currently on Trek ranks, and just because I want to, my five words in the hashtag for The Wolf Inside is Tyler Payoff worth the wait, hashtag Volk, son of none. All right, Bill, nice. What do you got? What's your number one pick?
My number one pick, five words in a hashtag, 133 jumps, hashtag RIP General Cole. And it is Into the Forest I Go, the mid-season finale. I think this is the episode that, for me, is most successful at capitalizing on the storytelling style of the show, all of the different sub-stories, all the plots are all kind of culminating here. The Stamets relationship with the mycelial the spore drive has big payoff here. There's big hints about Ash Tyler's identity and what's going on there in this episode. Burnham going over to the Klingon ship and having to face the Klingons again on that bridge. They're seeing Lorca in command before you really know, but in his element too, in a battle situation. It's all kind of happening there for me. And it's before the second half of the season where the show really gets shaken up and the crew gets broken up and people don't come back to the Discovery, Lorca, and all that. Like, this is the last time you get like the cast as we thought we knew it in the first season, all together in their roles on the bridge, doing the jobs that you think they're going to be doing for the duration of the show, kicking butt in a big time situation. My favorite special effects shot in the season is that long shot of the Klingon ship decloaking with the Discovery off in the distance, looking at like that long shot of the decloaking, so cool. With the score building is so cool. So that's my number one right now.
I love it. It's my number three, by the way. So I love your guys' picks. I love you guys. And my five words in a hashtag were mesmerizing mid-season finale offers solutions, hashtag, and tantalizing questions. Alex, what's your take on Into the Forest I Go, which is just amazing?
I think this was my number two episode of the season. Fabulous. My favorite effect sequence in the episode is when the Discovery is jumping around the Klingon ship and you see it from all kinds of different angles. It's just a glorious, glorious shot. And again, you have riddled throughout the episode these Lorca scenes where when you watch it the first time, you see one thing. And when you watch it the second time, you see something entirely different. The first time he's rousing the troops and being the kind of traditional Starfleet captain of, you know, now hear this, we'll win the day. And the second time you watch it, he's just the most manipulative individual you could imagine and moves all of the chess pieces into place to get what he wants. I thought the writing on the episode was spectacular. And I just, part of me hopes that a transporter beam snuck General Cole away just before the destruction of the Ship of the Dead so that we see that character again, as unlikely as that is.
You killed Kufma. And this belonged to your captain.
Her name was Captain Philippa Georgiou.
I regret that my actions that day have locked our people into this war.
While I thank you for it, my rise to power would not be possible if not for the assassination of Kukufma. Lock her up. Once I return with the slayer of their messiah, what remains of Kukufma's torch-bearing fools will have no choice but to fall in line.
If you are to capture me, then prove your worth. Kukufma defeated the woman whom that belonged to. Do me the same honor.
I accept your challenge, human.
So great. You know what I remember about this episode too is when about a few days before Ted Sullivan was the executive producer was saying on Twitter that this episode is like Balance of Terror level good.
Mm-hmm.
It was written by Bowie and Erica, the two writers on staff. I remember thinking, oh, that's cool. I mean, it's not going to be Balance of Terror good. Well, that's hyperbole. But after the episode, I was like, this is legitimately Balance of Terror good. That's how impressed I was by that episode. Phenomenal. Love these two picks, guys. All right. So my number one pick, we have alluded to it many times in this show already. And my five words and a hashtag are incredible introduction of ship and crew. Hashtag save the tardigrade. My favorite episode is Context is for King, episode 3 from the season. And I did kind of toy with the idea of moving this out of the top spot with Into the Forest I Go or maybe even What's Past is Prologue or The Wolf Inside. But ultimately, I've been locked and loaded on this since day one for Star Trek Discovery, and I just love that this is, which I think Alex you mentioned, it's kind of an awesome backdoor pilot, just the way this is episode 3, but it's really the introduction of Discovery, and I love the way that was introduced. So you get this 2-hour prequel movie and then this amazing pilot in episode 3 that sets up so many cool mysteries, the spore jumping, what Stamets up to, Lorca's backstory, Burnham's backstory, the Black Alerts. I love the way this episode unfolds. And you've got this at the end. I just remember tearing up. I literally, this first time I teared up watching Discovery when with this connection to Burnham and Amanda when she's telling this story and connecting back to Spock and Amanda reading them stories. That was just amazing. So,
I thought you were on a prison shuttle.
I'm still here. Hope you don't mind.
I'm glad. Here's a thing most people don't know about me. I'm going to be a captain someday. The thing is that there are still some things I need to learn. And I know that you were one of the most highly regarded first officers in Starfleet, and I have read everything there is on Georgiou.
Captain Georgiou.
Chris, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
It's okay.
Wow, is that a book?
When I was a kid, after my parents were killed, my foster mother on Vulcan used to read it to me and her son. She and I were the only humans in the house. It's how I learned that the real world doesn't always adhere to logic. Sometimes down is up. Sometimes up is down. Sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
What was her name?
Amanda.
Yeah. Oh, and then they had that great scene with Burnham in the spore drive where Lorca was showing her all these different locations that were all connected to old TOS locations. So I just love that episode so much. Bill, what's your take on Context is for Kings?
It's way up there for me. in this rewatch I just did over the past weekend, it's the episode that I think benefits the most from, funnily enough, context. There's so much in it that is mysterious and off-putting and weird when you don't know what's coming, which I think is what caused a lot of pushback for a lot of people, like we've talked about, people wanting to know what everything means and how it's all going to come together before they know. And going back and watching it with the knowledge of what's coming and how the story is ultimately going to unfold really just adds all kinds of layers. And there's so many hints and little breadcrumbs that are getting dropped in that episode. And I just love, specific to this episode, but it even goes beyond that, this episode in particular, the show is so through Michael Burnham's eyes. And when she gets onto the Discovery in context is for Kings,
right,
it's so dark and miserable and off-putting and intimidating and mysterious, because that's how Michael Burnham sees it. But as the season goes along and Michael Burnham gets more comfortable with it, it's lighter and easier to take for us too. But context is for Kings does such a good job of like establishing that this is playing the long game and we're seeing it through this character's eyes. We're in her head. And yeah, it's way up there for me. It's in my top five, no doubt.
Yeah. Alex, how about you?
Yeah, I think, Bill, that's such a fabulous point. I mean, one of the mysteries that a lot of fans have kept bringing up again and again and again about this episode is, well, what's up with the black badges? Yeah. But it's not about the black badges. It's about the way that Burnham sees, yes, the ship that she's on, right? Like in another context, a black badge is, it's just a, yeah, badge, right? It's just a uniform piece. It's not necessarily Section 31, mm-hmm, or, you know, any of those other theories that people have had about it. It's just that you have this character who's like, I have no idea why, mm-hmm, I'm here, and this is such a weird place to be. The other thing I'll call out, and you guys have picked out some of the great moments of the episode, like the spore travel at the end, yeah, is the introduction of Tilly.
Oh yeah,
a fabulous character who I resonated with immediately from her very first scene. I thought this is going to be a really fun character. And the biggest surprise, I think, going into the show, you know, the cadet character, oh great, you know, here we go again. And then in the first, you know, 15 seconds of her coming in there into the quarters and Burnham's lying on her bed and the lines that she gives, I just thought it was such a great moment and I've been Team Tilly ever since.
Yep. Perfect. And that's a good segue into our secondary systems, because Cadet Tilly and, you know, all things Mary Wiseman are on, definitely on my list for secondary systems. So let's do some of those. Bill, what's on your secondary systems picks?
The thing that I really struggled with not having on here in some capacity is the casting in general. Like every other Star Trek show we've ever had, you know, the mix of actors, actresses, is just really, really good. And it's not just the main five or six in the main credits. It's this deep bench of veterans like James Frayne and Jane Brooke and newcomers like Mary Chifo and on the main cast, Mary Wiseman. So it's this mix of veteran actors who we've seen things from before. Sonequa Martin-Green's obviously got, you know, a lot of exposure on The Walking Dead. People know who she is, know what she's about. Jason Isaacs, obviously, same thing. So you have people like that, but you also have discoveries like, to use a pun, Mary Wiseman and Mary Chifo. The balance in the cast is perfect, and the chemistry is obvious from the very beginning, and it's been even more obvious as we've gotten to know the cast and seen them in things like After Track and at Comic-Con and conventions and all kinds of stuff. So,
yeah, that's awesome. And I'm going to add in there Ensign Connor. Sam,
oh, he's great.
Bartholomeos, yeah. I just love that he died twice with Burnham around. but one of my favorite moments of the year was when of the season was when he stumbles his way into the brig. And remember, the production side of the promotion side of Discovery had been promoting this guy as a character. He's at at Star Trek Las Vegas. He's on stage. He's promoting. He's tweeting. And he gets sucked out into space at the beginning of the second episode. And I was literally like, what? Ensign Connor is dead? What the heck is this show doing? So I love that moment. How about you, Alex? Any other secondary systems?
Yeah, I got four things to call out.
Okay.
One, the Stamets-Kolba relationship. Yep. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how Wilson Cruz returns to Discovery in Star Trek Discovery Season 2, because we've been told that he will. And then three names for interaction with the fans. I think you got to do a huge shout out to Mary Chifo, who was at Star Trek Las Vegas last year and stayed for, I think, 4 out of the 5 days, just kind of being around the halls, meeting people, at a time when, you know, a lot of people were, there was lots of excitement, but there was also a huge amount of trepidation, especially around the Klingon design issue. And there we had one of the major Klingon characters around and having to defend the choices that the show made. Kenneth Mitchell as well has also been, has relished the fact that he's in Star Trek and has been really good with the fans. Was also at Star Trek Las Vegas, has been very active on Twitter. That's part of the reason why if he doesn't come back as General Cole, I would like a Jeffrey Combs-esque return for Kenneth Mitchell in some other role.
That's a great idea.
And then the last one.
Great idea.
Yeah. And then the last one is Ted Sullivan. Executive producer who, excuse me, has been far and away the most active of the kind of behind the camera folks in communicating with the fans, in working with them, in answering questions, and really demonstrating and being a voice for the writers' room and demonstrating that they know their Star Trek One and they love their Star Trek Two. And, you know, Ted didn't have to do that because, you know, it's easy from behind the camera to just kind of slip into the background. But I think he really picked up that mantle and ran with it. And huge kudos to him, because I think he has been a really effective ambassador for the show.
For sure. That's an awesome shout out.
He didn't just talk the talk too. He walked the walk. Like, two of my absolute favorite episodes that none of us talked about in our favorite episode segment, Lethe and What's Past the Spurlog, are both episodes that he's credited as writing, and they're way up on my list. So not only is he a great ambassador and he talks a good game and is great with the fans, but he's given us two of the better episodes of the season.
Yep. Totally agree. All right. I'm going to give one more shout out to a production design element. It's the Shenzhou. I just love this ship. It's actually one of my favorites in Trek, and I love that it was designed by John Eaves, who's a connection to Trek designs of the past. I just love that ship. Really awesome. All right, great secondary systems. So let's jump into our regeneration cycle and go through a quick recap of our picks.
Computer, activate regeneration cycle. Alcoves beta and gamma.
All right, so we won't have any statistics in this round because there's really nothing to report on that front, but let's run through our picks really quick so we get a quick summary. So, Alex, run down your 5 picks.
So, production design element, for me, it was the hand-to-hand combat, the fight choreography. My favorite actor on the show was Anthony Rapp. For the Darbo round, I chose the Lorca-Cornwell scenes in Lethe as kind of indicative of how you can watch much of the show again with entirely new context and see it in an entirely different way. For my favorite character, I chose Saru. And for my favorite episode, I chose The Wolf Inside.
Awesome. Bill, run down your 5 picks.
For my favorite production design element, I chose the sound design. For my favorite actor, I chose Doug Jones. For the Dabo round, I chose the main title sequence and theme / Jeff Russo's score as a whole. For my favorite character, I chose Michael Burnham. And for my favorite episode, I chose Into the Forest I Go.
Awesome picks across the board. And my rundown is round 5 production design was the new phaser for Discovery. My number 4 for favorite performer was Jason Isaacs. For the Dabo round, I had the bookend storytelling that they did so well from the writer's room to start and finish the season. My favorite character was Michael Burnham, and my favorite episode was Context is for Kings. All right, so once again, we have encountered... Oh, it's Harry Mudd this time with a coronal displacement time crystal. And damn it, he just activated it. So it's time to flash back to our last episode and hear from our listeners.
What's happening? You? You've been cheating. Passing notes in class to save your friends. Well, whatever you think you've come up with, I'll find a workaround. I'll keep resetting time until I do. Nobody beats Mudd.
Our last episode was a super fun one as we broke down our top five doppelgangers, duplicates, and doubles. And as per usual, you guys did not let us down. We got a ton of cool, deep, deep cut picks for this week's temporal causality loop. And the list I want to highlight this week came in from Jen S. at EatAtQuarks on Twitter. Her list was pretty much a perfect amalgamation of our show, and then basically she had like five different kinds of doppelgangers and duplicates and doubles. So her number five pick was like Claire's, who was on our show, and it was a little more lighthearted. It was Riker's fake sideburns in The Defiant, which I love. Her number four pick was a displaced reality pick, which was grown-up Jake in The Visitor. Her number three pick was a very scary, dark body invasion. It was Keiko as a Paul Wraith in The Assignment. Wow. Genius pick. Her number two pick, straight up mass duplication with the entire crew of Voyager and the ship in Course Oblivion. And she's the only one to send this in. Her number one doppelganger, duplicate, and double was a merging of two characters with the awesome outside-of-the-box pick of Curzon Dax and Odo. Such a great pick. I love that list. Really, really clever. So, all right, one more quick pick as my favorite overall deep cut selection of the week. And that award goes to the Borg at Star Trek 1701 on Twitter. And one of his picks was amazing. It's someone you've heard on every single episode of Trek Ranks. It's the Prelor and Kravik automated units from the Voyager episode prototype. It's just an awesome pick. He had actually had a five words and a hashtag, and they were automated unit 3947 is alive, hashtag define prime directive. Brilliant pick. All right. As always, with picks that great, we've once again easily pulled ourselves out of this week's temporal causality loop. You can't keep us in there, Harry Mudd. So as always, big thank you to everyone for all the great responses to Trek Ranks. Keep those lists coming to me at Trek Ranks on Twitter so we can retweet them. But we also want to hear from you. So please put together your own list of top five Discovery Season 1 moments and give us a call at the Tricorder Transmissions at 609-512-5527. That's 609-512-LLAP. So hopefully we will hear from you so you can be featured on the next episode of Trek Ranks. And on the next episode of Trek Ranks, we are doing one of our finite topics. And that's a show where we pick a topic that only has a few possible choices. And we're going to discuss each potential pick and then rank them. So Alex, you were on one of those shows when we did our top premiere episodes.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so this one we're going to change our style a little bit for next week's topic. And I knew we'd get to this one eventually. And eventually we're going to get to all these different positions. But for now, we're starting next week with our top five series engineers. So your choices are Montgomery Scott from the original series, Geordi LaForge from Next Generation, Miles O'Brien from Deep Space Nine, B'Elanna Torres from Voyager, and Trip Tucker from Enterprise. And I guess we can also include Montgomery Scott and Keenser as well from the Kelvin timeline, so if you want. So we'll let you stretch that far. And I know we usually say no wrong answers here on Trek Ranks, but if anybody picks Chief Engineer Argyle from TNG, they are going to be scrubbing plasma conduits on Deck 39 for a long time. All right, Alex and Bill, really quick, not much to think about here, but with no time to really analyze it, who you got? Who's your number one Trek engineer? Alex?
I think I'm going to go with B'Elanna Torres from Voyager, and the episode I would choose to signify that character is Extreme Risk.
Fantastic. I forgot to mention the episodes. We are going to do that, of course. Bill, who's your number one engineer?
It's got to be Lieutenant Commander Leland T. Lynch. No.
You're scrubbing plasma conduits too.
It's even worse than Argyle.
And the episode is The Arsenal of Freedom.
I'll go with Trip Tucker. I'm a huge Enterprise fanboy, and I think he's the heart and soul of that show. They're all great. I love all these characters, but Trip Tucker's my guy.
My commanding officer.
Yep.
Love it. All right. So it'll be a little bit of a different structure for next week's Trek Ranks, and I can't wait to do that, see how that one works out. All right, so before we wrap it up here, a huge thanks to Alexander T. Perry and Bill Mann. So great to have you guys on the show. Any final thoughts, Alex?
No, this was a lot of fun. It's going to be a long wait to Discovery Season 2, but I think we will probably find out not too long amount of time who's going to play Captain Pike as Captain of the Enterprise and who will be the next Discovery Captain. There are so many questions.
Yeah, who knows? Going into Season 2. Who knows how they're going to play through on that? And I'm hoping, Bill and I were talking about it before we started recording, I'm hoping there's a way debut still in 2018. We'll see. It's got a chance, but it'd probably be 2019. All right, Bill, any final thoughts on your end?
No, a lot of similar stuff. I'm very curious to see what they do with how they're going to do the Enterprise thing. You know, are they going to recast characters? Are they going to come up with some kind of a crazy, it's just the beginning of some kind of crazy storyline where they have to go find the Enterprise or something. Who knows? Just really curious. The possibilities are endless. And I love that the cliffhanger was not really a cliffhanger. Like, it is, but it's not hanging any story threads left over or anything. It's just like anything can happen from here, which is kind of refreshing and cool.
Yeah, no doubt that it's a great cliffhanger because it just makes you happy.
Yeah, exactly.
And not like not pulling your hair out. So right. I love that. And we need to make a pact. We're going to start a Twitter campaign to get Ken Mitchell see the Jeffrey Combs Season 2, get him back as a character, because that guy is awesome.
Yes.
I love that idea. I'm gonna get on that. All right, so again, just want to thank everyone for engaging with us here on episode 22 of the Trek Ranks podcast. As always, I want to close by saying I'm looking forward to standing with you again here in this place where I belong.
It is well known that my species has the ability to sense the coming of death. I do not sense it today. I may not have all the answers. However, I do know that I am surrounded by a team I trust. The finest a captain could ever hope to command. Lorca abused our idealism. And make no mistake, Discovery is no longer Lorca's. She is ours. And today will be her maiden voyage. We have a duty to perform, and we will not accept a no-win scenario. You have your orders? On your way.
Hi there, thanks again for listening. If you're cruising the galaxy looking for even more Trek talk, why not visit our good friends Bill and Dan over at TrekGeeks.com? They've got a great podcast that covers a wide range of Star Trek topics, so you're sure to find something you'll love. And if you're in the mood for some awesome tunes, then you really need to head over to 5YearMission.net. The guys are writing a song for every episode of the original series, and each one is absolutely brilliant. So that's TrekGeeks.com and 5YearMission.net. Check them out today.